This is a continuation of an interview of John Hutchings for the Charles Redd Center for Western Studies at Brigham Young University, Provo, Utah, and the Utah State Historical Society Oral History Project by Robert Green on August 14, 1973, at the John Hutchings Museum, Lehigh, Utah, at approximately 2:10 p.m. Last time, you were just beginning to tell me about your experiences at Bingham.
Let's see, had I started to work in Bingham?
Yes.
Did I tell you that I was married now?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, maybe that's just, well, I don't. But that's, being married, I think, was my salvation. Because I had a wife and baby to think of. Well, the first introduction I had to mining in Bingham was the Highland Boy. The superintendent there was very, very kind, and he gave me a very good job. But I soon found out that, or determined to myself, that just the working by the day was not the right thing to do, so I commenced thinking about leasing. I had several small leases in the Highland Boy mine, time after time, and the U.S. mine and several other places up there. But I was, I guess I was married, and by the way, did I tell you, just cut it off a minute. Missionary work either. Well, there was once or twice in my life that I got really homesick, and this happened to be one of them. I came down home, and everything was overgrown with weeds, and I felt pretty discouraged, so I thought I would stay home. And I looked around, and I had a cousin by marriage that come to see me, and he says, "John, I've got a chance to take a lease or a contract on a mine up Alpine. It's just a prospect hole, but there's good potential there. There's, I think we could do good. If you'd like, go in with me and we'll take it on." So we went up and looked the property over, and they called it the Midnight Bell, the prospect. So it looked quite favorable, and then the contract was for a 600-foot drift to go straight into the side of the hill. And so I signed the contract with him, and we started. We worked there for several months, and we got a real good showing. It was easy digging, but it was very dangerous because it was wet, and it was all put together in kind of a talc, but it showed pretty good prospects. And we thought, well, anyhow, we're going to strike water, and so that'll be about as good as the gold. So we kept digging. We had to drive our timber, head timber, by putting a set of square set in and then driving up over that and into the face. And as we would mine out, we'd drive the lagging in above us, so, and then put in another set. Now we've been going pretty fast that way, but day after day, the same work, and same surroundings and everything. We were there, just the two of us, and I didn't quarrel because he was bigger than I was. He didn't quarrel, I was afraid I'd quit. So we got along pretty good. But one morning I says, "Walt, I'm going down to Lehigh." It had been quite a while since I'd had that urge. And he said, "Oh, whom the devil you got in Lehigh?" And I says, "Nobody, but I just have an urge to go to Lehigh." So he said, "Well, take a few days off and I'll go home too." And he lived in Lehigh. And we both went down, come down to home, and I don't know why, because I never wrote any letters to speak of, only to, when mother and father were alive, I'd write home, but to no one else. But some reason or other, I was downtown, and the urge come to go in the post office. So I went in, and who disposed of the postmaster? An old schoolmaster of mine, Joseph Anderson. And he was very glad to see me. It had been years since we'd met, and I was getting pretty well filled with the mining, because I had I was afraid I was getting miner's con, because I'd taken so many chances in unventilated places. And so I was wondering how I'd get along without going back to that old wet hole. So I went in. Mr. Anderson was very glad to see me, and he said, "I'm glad you come in, John." He said, "There's a letter here. I should have sent it, returned it, more than a week ago. But I thought you'd been so long, you'd sure show up." So he went in the office and got a letter. It was a large envelope, and postmarked Salt Lake City, church office in Salt Lake City. I wondered, I said to him, "This isn't for me, this is some, must be to John Hutchings." He said, "No, I think maybe that's for you." So I didn't open it. He was very anxious that he could, because I guess he knew what it was, but I didn't. And I got home and opened it. And at the bottom of the letter, I always read the bottom first to see who it's from. It was from Anthony Ivins and Joseph F. Smith, is president of the church, the three of them. I can't call the other one right now. And it was a call to go on a mission to the northern states with headquarters in Chicago. Well, talk about a shocked person, that was me. I just didn't know what to do. I couldn't go to anybody for advice because, as I've said before, my parents were dead, and no one else had ever thought anything of me. So I went home and slept on. In the morning I got up and told them that I had received the letter and would follow out the instructions. The instructions were to answer immediately, and then on the given date I'd be at the Salt Lake Temple at 10 o'clock in the morning to be set apart. So I went up and went to the temple, and you know, I had created a few little bad spots in my character. I had learned to use tobacco, so I'd smoked all the way up to Salt Lake. And so they took me in for an interview, and they asked me all about marriage and my church affiliations and all this, that, and the other. And then I had to go to the doctor, Richards. He was the church doctor at that time. And he gave me a good going over, and he says, "You've used tobacco?" And I says, "Yes, sir." He said, when did you stop using it? And I said, on my way up here. And he looked at me kind of questioning like, and he said, do you think you'll stay quit? And I said, do you think I'd be here if I hadn't made up my mind? Yes, I've stayed quit. He says, all right. He finished out the physical, and then I went through the temple ordinance and set apart for the Northern States Mission. But when I got that letter, I only had 10 days before I was to report to the church headquarters. You see, I'd been away over a month, and that letter had been there all the time waiting. But I was determined, if I thought they thought me worthy to go, I would show them that I was. So after the temple ordinance was over, I had just an hour and a half to get down the railroad, the Rio Grande, to get my ticket to Chicago. So I had to go to the CCMI and outfit myself, which I wish I hadn't have done, because when we got to Chicago, I had to get a new outfit altogether. The clothes that they had recommended to the CCMI wasn't fit for a Mormon missionary. But anyhow, I went. 2 days and three nights I was on the way from Salt Lake, Chicago. And I went and to the address, 110 South Polina Street, was the address that I was told to report to. And who should be there but the husband of one of my old school teachers, German E. Ellsworth. And he immediately recognized me. I suppose he had had communication saying that I was to arrive, but anyhow, he treated me very nicely, and he said, I'm going to send you down in the worst places in this mission. I says, that's all right. That's the way you feel. It's all right with me. I'm going to send you down to Shawneetown in the southern end of Illinois. He says, you'll find lots of opposition there, Brother Hutchings. But I have confidence in you. And you've been to have enough experience that I don't think it'll affect you in any way. When I got to Shawneetown, they were holding a conference there, the Southern Illinois Conference. So there was 14 elders and the president and myself met at the conference. And I was designated by President Bechstead, who was the president of that conference, to go alone. I guess it was through advice from the President Ellsworth. So the next morning when they sent us out, each pair of elders, I was an odd one. And he said, Brother Hutchings, my wife used to teach you in school. And when we were talking about it, I told her you were coming to this mission, she was delighted. And she said that she was always one of her A-grade students. Of course, I questioned that quite a bit. But anyhow, he gave us a map. Each pair of elders, in that particular time, by the way, they were contacting businessmen. We'd go each week and meet at the next county seat. But we had to visit every businessman en route to our next conference for Saturday and Sunday. And the particular route that I was to go over was to make it over to the Mississippi River from the Ohio. And he gave me a large list of names. And he says, Brother Hutchings, these are families that we haven't heard from in 20 years. I want you to find them. and see, get their testimony if you can. He said, I want you to go alone. You know, the old devil was right there. I didn't like that go alone. Everybody else had a partner. But I soon found out it was for my best good. So I went up the Mississippi River. They were all converts that hadn't been heard of in 20 years. And I commenced right at East St. Louis. I went on up, and every night I found one of those people. They were old, and they were all very, very glad to see me. Most of them hadn't seen an elder from the time that they had joined the church, been baptized. And one of them says, we had a letter from your conference president from Shawneetown. He says, did you like Shawneetown? I says, well, no, not particular. It's Levittown. He says, you know, the last elders that was there, they'd been tarred and feathered and put on a rail and carried on the back of men up to Elizabethtown, which is about 7 miles away, and dumped. And there hasn't been elders back there since. So I seen that I had done pretty well that far. Anyhow, each night I managed to find the man or the family that was on the list. When we got up to Pinckneyville, in the meantime, I hadn't received a letter. But when I went to Pinckneyville, something impressed me to go and see if there's any mail, because my next address would have been Pinckneyville. It was the county seat of Merriam County. I went up and asked the postmaster if there was any mail there from John Hutchings, Elder John Hutchings. He says, yes, we've been keeping it for about 4 weeks now. There's a whole bunch of mail. And he handed it out to me. And when we left the town below, I had been assigned to make it to this Elizabethtown and find an old man by the name of Gernard. But I found that somebody else had been getting my mail. There was another John Hutchings, lived out about 9 miles out in the country. So I looked him up, and he was a young fellow. And if there had been a looking glass and I was looking into it, I couldn't have been more impressed with myself. Because this fellow was red-headed, freckle-faced, and about my age. And he had been receiving my letters. He'd opened one, and he said it came on the RFD, and he had thought maybe another John Hutchings was going to come get them, because they'd told him, the postmaster, that I would be there. So he gave me my mail. And the man that I had to look for was a man by the name of Gernard. He was a German. He and his wife were both members of the church. They hadn't been visited for 18 years, and they'd never seen an elder in the meantime. And I was to find out their standing and all about them. So Elizabethtown, I got to that and was just beginning to get dark. The sun had gone down. And I went to a house. I don't know why, but I thought, well, if I'm a missionary and traveling without purse or scrip, I might as well start. So I went and told the lady who I was and what I was doing. She said, well, we're not Mormons here. We don't want anything to do with you. I says, I realize that. But I'd like to meet some of the people here anyhow. And he says, well, my father's the minister. We all belong to the Christian Science people. And he's the minister here. He lives right down on the corner. And I said, well, I wanted to find out where this Gernard was. He said, oh, he's a good 9 miles out in the hills, in the hill country. He says, you couldn't go there tonight, because the sun was just gone down then. He said, wait, my husband will soon be in from the field, and possibly he will take you. So we waited, and it's after a while, just getting dark, and here coming in, she introduced me to him, says, this is one of them Mormon elders. He said, oh, it's been a long time since I've seen one. He come in, he said, well, you're just a kid. And I said, yes. I said, I'm looking for a man by the name of Garnard. Oh, he lives 9 miles out in the country, out in the woods, wood country, we call it. He says, if you'll wait till morning, you can sleep here tonight, and I'll take you out in the morning. So I thought that was pretty good. Well, he left me in the front room, and while I was there, a little boy come in, and he'd come right over to me, barefooted, dirty face, and I guess he had as many freckles as I used to have when I was a kid, but he had a lot of them. And he says, what you doing? I said, well, I'm writing up my diary. He said, what's your diary? He says, well, we Mormon elders, we all have to keep a record of our diary. And he crawled upon my lap. He says, can I watch you? And I said, well, yes. And I started to write again. And he says, do you ever draw any pictures? And I said, oh, yes, I draw pictures sometimes. I used to do a lot of drawing. He says, draw a picture for me.